Alhamdulillah, after that happened, my father had started a business in Overport in Durban, and I was born in 1940 in Overport. A few months after I was born, I went. There was, those of you who are from Durban, you will know a street called Zulu Motors. Very famous street, Zulu Motors. I love that particular street, and I used to go and buy that street always. Anyway, one day when I bought the street and was coming back because from Sparks Road. Sparks Road was where I was born. So as I must have been about 2 years old. As I was coming back with streets, I fell under a huge tree. I fell underneath the tree and my body began to twist. And I was gone from home for a long time. So my parents actually came down looking for me. Where had I disappeared? And when they saw me under the tree, they found that my whole body had twisted. And they, of course, picked me up. And they took me home. And then they called the doctors to come and examine. At that time, there was a hospital, the King Edward Hospital in Durban. And because my body was twisted so badly, my parents became very worried as to what is happening. So they took me to the King Edward Hospital and I was admitted there. The doctors at King Edward Hospital, even the specialists, could not establish what was wrong with me. They couldn't understand. So at that time, there was a visiting doctor from the UK, and he came to see me. And when he came to see me and examine me, he said, "You know something? Where did this person, what happened to him?" After my father told him, he gave him an account. He said, "You know what your son has got? He's got polio." At that time, in 1942, polio was unknown in South Africa. So, historically, I was the first victim who had polio in South Africa. And what he tried to establish, his name was Dr. Godfrey Evans. Dr. Godfrey Evans. He, at that time, examined me and established that what they wanted to find out, where did the germ for me having polio, where did it come from? And whatever they tried, they never established where it came from. Anyway, I was 5 years in the King Edward Hospital. And at that time, the doctors, even Dr. Godfrey even told my parents that, "Listen here, we do not give your son more than 5 years, maximum 10 years, that he will survive. He will not live more than 10 years. There's no ways he will live. I'm over 70, I'm 73, and I'm still alive." But allowing with and still going and getting on. So, Alhamdulillah, if you remember, in Durban, there was a riot, I think it was in 1948, the Zulus and Indians clashes, a lot of Indians were murdered at the time. So, two of my uncles were in Cape Town. And both of them were property agents. One of them, my uncle Ahmed, was working for a company here in Cape Town called Paramount Auctioneers, property agent. And he then sent a message to my father. He said, "Listen, Abdurrahim, you pack up and come away to Cape Town." So my father asked him that, "Can you find me a business there?" And it was then that my uncle wrote to him and told him that, "Listen, I found a business for you in Stellenbosch It's a house with a business, with a shop. In those days, that is how it was, house and shop. So I found this for you. The rental is very reasonable, and you come over and you go into Stellenbosch. So that is how in 1948 we moved from Durban and we came to Cape Town. That was in 1948. Alhamdulillah, we established ourselves in Stellenbosch. Then we went to, in Durban, I stayed with my granny, my mother's mother, and in there, a school had opened up with the madrasa called the South Coast Madrasa in Pine Road. And I went there and I did my class one, class two, standard one, and standard two there. And then, of course, when we moved to Cape Town, we went to the school in Stellenbosch, and I did my schooling there in Stellenbosch. And then, after we finished up standard six, then my father said, "Listen, Stellenbosch is Afrikaans medium, and I don't want you people to learn only Afrikaans. English is very important. So I'm going to send you all to Cape Town." So we were admitted in the school in Cape Town called the Trafalgar High School. And of course, then we used to travel by train from Stellenbosch every morning, from Stellenbosch to Cape Town. And for 5 years, we traveled and we went there. And in 1959, I matriculated, and my brother Ali also matriculated. Then my father came to me in 1959. My father came, and many of you have asked me this question. And last night I had a dream, and my father came to me in that dream, and he reminded me the reason why he came to us and told us that we must go and study the deen. The reason was that he had gone for one chilla. For 4 months he had given, he went to the Jamaat to America. And he had spent 4 months in America. And the amount of thirst for Islam he encountered in America was phenomenal. And it was then that he decided, "I'm going to send my two sons to India to obtain to be a knowledge of the deen." So that is the reason why he came. So in 1959, when we matriculated, my father came to us and he told us that, "Listen, I'm going to send the two of you to India to go and study deen." At that time, there were two students from Cape Town who were studying in Nadwa, Nadwatul Ulama in Lucknow. And he decided to send us there mainly to learn Urdu and, of course, Deen. So, Alhamdulillah, at those days, we used to travel by ship, the Kampala and the Karanja. These were Italian liners. And they used to take about 2 or 3 weeks to travel from Durban to Bombay. So, Alhamdulillah, we went by ship and traveled to Bombay via Beira and all these other islands and so on. And we went to, in 1959, we traveled to India. And from there, from Bombay, we took a train. And of course, then we went to Lucknow. At that time, the principal of Nadwatul Ulama was a very famous person, Sheikh Abul Hasan Ali Nadwi, Rahmatullah Ali. And the other teacher there was Hazrat Manzoor Nomani Sahib, Rahmatullah Ali. There were some other teachers there as well. I can't remember their names very well. Only one I can remember, Maulana Ishaq Sandaoli Sahib, Rahmatullah Ali. But anyway, we went there and we were tutored and we learned the deen there. What I forgot to mention to you was After I left King Edward Hospital, my both legs were in bad shape, so I had iron straps around my knees and my ankles. So when I went to India, I had that with me, and iron straps around my knees and my ankles. So when I went to Lucknow, I had this on, and I felt very, very strange, but there it was. I couldn't walk without that. But Alhamdulillah, when I went to Lucknow, I had that with me. And I spent 2 years in Lucknow. And then, of course, after that, Mullah Ali Mir Sahib, or Sheikh Abdul Hassan Ali Nadwi, was an excellent teacher. Mullah Manzoor Rahmani Sahib was also excellent. These were profound teachers. The ta'alluq between a student and a teacher, these mudarris, the ulama, is one of very special note, very, very binding it is. And alhamdulillah, they were like fathers to us, and they looked after us in the same manner. So from Lucknow, I went to Nizamuddin, and because Mawlana Ali Mir Sahib Rahmatullah Ali was one who every Friday encouraged us to go Rai Bareli and all the areas around Lucknow, he used to send us for Dawat and Tabligh. We used to encourage a lot at that time. Alhamdulillah, so our ta'alluq with the Tabligh Jamaat and with the work of Dawat and Tabligh was a phenomenal one. And it was greatly encouraged by Hazrat Mawlana Abul Hasan Ali, whom we called Mawlana Ali Mir Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. Then when I went to Nizamuddin, then Hazrat Mawlana Yusuf Sahib Rahmatullah Ali was the Amir of the Jamaat at that time. And he told us that, listen, chutti ka zamana hai, what are you doing? Why don't you come with me? I'm going to Pakistan. So I said, yes, it's a chutti, it's a leave time. I can come with you, no problem, but I've got one problem. So he said, what is your problem? I said, I got no money. I never brought any money with me. So he said, don't worry. If you are with the Jamaat, you don't have to worry about money. The Jamaat will see to it that you come with us. So 40 people at that time from Nizamuddin were ready to go with Hazrat Mawlana Yusuf Sahib Rahmatullah to Lahore in Pakistan. And these were, many of them were seniors of the Jamaat. So Alhamdulillah, I joined up with them and got ready, and we then traveled. Hazrat Mawlana Yusuf Sahib Rahmatullah was, this word I learned many years later, was the most charismatic personality. I have never met anybody in my entire life that was as charismatic, with the power to draw people to him as Hazrat Mawlana Yusuf Sahib Rahmatullah. Whenever he opened his mouth to talk, everybody fell silent. Everybody listened to him. And he was also a very relaxed, very humble spoken person, and very lighthearted. He used to make people laugh at his bayans. And this was a very great speciality about him. And as I say, whenever he opened his mouth, Alhamdulillah, everybody felt silent. Everybody listened to him. And that is why when I learned the word charisma, I applied it to him. But that is the kind of personality that he was. Alhamdulillah, we went with him via the border into Lahore. And in Lahore at that time, there was a particular family that had a very big industry. They were called Sultan Foundry. These were multi-millionaires. very rich and wealthy family. They had all the facilities for the Jamaat. There was a masjid there, sleeping accommodation, everything. They were the only family in Pakistan at that time that had six jeeps. Now, at that time in India, to have six jeeps in their company was very unique. That tells you how well they were to do. They used to make all the electric poles. That's why it was called foundry. All the electric poles for the Pakistani government. Anyhow, Alhamdulillah, we stayed there. But who knew that Hazrat Yusuf Abraham would become very, very ill? He became so ill that no matter how many doctors and specialists came to treat him, they were unable to treat him. And eventually, after, you know, I saw Hazrat Yusuf Abraham, he was suffering so much. He became so sick that he was incurable. Nobody could cure him, and eventually he passed away. Then when he passed away, then Mashwara was held, what must they do? So they phoned Nizamuddin to find out what must they do. Must they bury him in Lahore, or what must they do? And at that time from Nizamuddin, a notice came, by train it is 6 hours from Lahore to Nizamuddin. So the request was, send the body to Nizamuddin, send it back. So, Alhamdulillah, Mashwara is held, and in the Mashwara, the seniors decided to wrap the body up nicely, and a Jamaat was formed to take the body back to Nizamuddin. Alhamdulillah, that is what was done. I sat on one side, as a youngster, I sat one side, and I listened to the Mashwara, where they decided to send the body back to Nizamuddin. So Hazrat Yusuf Abraham Tuhari's body was sent back. And before Hazrat Yusuf had left Nizamuddin for Pakistan, what he had done, he had made Mullah Inamul Hasan Sahab Rahmatullahi to take his place. So obviously, when he passed away, Mullah Inamul Hasan Sahab Rahmatullahi took over as Amir of the Tabligh Jamaat. He was appointed to the post by Mullah Yusuf Sahab Rahmatullahi. So that is a bit of the background and the story. While I was in Pakistan, in Lahore, I went to some of the masjids there. One of the masjids I went to is called the Qila Masjid. In this Qila Masjid, there was a personality there, Hazrat Mawlana Ahmad Ali, Sheikh al Hadith, Hazrat Mawlana Ahmad Ali Lahori Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. And he was a unique personality. I'm going to describe something about you, but as ulamas, it's very important for us to know what kind of personality he was. In Juma, when he made bayan, he couldn't stand silently. He used to move 10, 15 steps to the right and 10, 15 steps to the left. Always he couldn't. So one day I raised my hands in Juma. I lifted my hands. I said, Hazrat, why don't you stand still? Why do you keep moving 15, 20 steps to your left and to your right? So he said, Mujhe ye bataye, dusre hazrat bhi hai jo janna chahte hain. Are there others also want to know why I move around like this? So everybody replied, Ji ha, hame bataye. So Hazrat Mawlana then turned on his back and he opened his back. I promise you that there wasn't a single person over 500 people in the masjid. I don't think there was a single one who did not cry when they saw the back of Abdul Qadir Saab, not a single one. Everybody burst out crying because there were 8 marks, what we call lacerations on his body. 8 marks across his back where he had been burnt. Where? In Malta. The British had laid him on iron bars and with a fire below. And he had been tortured in Malta because he was among those early people who opposed the British rule over India. And Allahu Akbar, that is why he couldn't stand straight and he used to move around. So Allahu Akbar, that is what we came to know at that time. And as I say, everybody was crying, everybody was very sad. Anyway, I was there and I met him. At that time, three American blacks had come to Lahore. They had come to do hifz. So, Alhamdulillah, Hazrat Maulana Ahmadi Lahori Sahab, they asked me, he said, look, आप अंग्रेजी भी बोलते हो उर्दू भी बोलते हो आप यहाँ रह जाइए लाहौर में और इसमें मेरे लिए भी सहूलत होगी. तो एनीवे आई डिसाइडेड देन टू रिमेन इन पाकिस्तान. देर वॉज अ वेरी फेमस मदरसा दारुल इन लाहौर एट द टाइम कॉल्ड दारुल अशरफिया एंड आई देन रिमेन देर and was admitted in Darul Ashrafiyah. And my asatizah there were Hazrat Maulana Muhammad Idris Khandelwi Sahib Rahmatullahi and Hazrat Maulana Amin Hassan Islahi Sahib. These were great, great men of the time. It was also the zamana of Maulana Maududi Sahib. I had gone, nobody told me anything. So I was studying under Hazrat Muhammad Idris Khandelwi Sahib. I used to go for tafsir to Hazrat Amin Hassan Islahi Sahib and go to Darul Ashrafiyah for my other studies. And what happened then is that, yeah. Maulana Maududi, I used to go to him a bit. But what happened then is when I went to Maulana Maududi, I was shocked, amazed, because he was highly critical of the Sahabas. He made such remarks about the Sahabas that it was totally unacceptable. No way, not even in Nadwa, not even Darul Ashrafiyah had I heard criticism of the Sahabas like I heard from his mouth. And he used to condemn certain things about theirs. I went back to my asatizah and I reported to them about this. And Hazrat Muhammad Idris Sahib and Hazrat Amin Hassan Islahi Sahib told me, listen, now that you've heard his criticism of the Sahaba, don't go there anymore because that is what he does. He is highly critical of the Sahaba, and we must not ever criticize the Sahaba. Anyway, that happened, and I stopped going there. I never went back to Maududi's classes at all whatsoever. I was 5 years in Lahore. I studied there. And while I was there was a place, Islamabad did not exist at that time. The place where I went to was Hazrat Maulana Ghulamullah Khan Sahib Rahmatullah. He was a Sheikh of Tafsir. So in Ramadan, I used to go there. I spent 3 Ramzan with Hazrat Maulana Ghulamullah Khan Sahib. From the first of Ramadan, from Fajr right up to Zohar. And then from Zohar, he used to take a break and then resume. After about 2 hours, he used to carry on with his tafsir until Asr, between Asr and Maghrib, between Maghrib and Isha, he used to continue with tafsir. So Alhamdulillah, as I said, 3 years of Ramadan I spent with him. I will tell you something else about him just now. And then for 3 years, I went down to a place called Multan. And from Multan, there's a place called Khanpur. There was a very great buzurg there, Hazrat Abdullah Darkhasi Sahib, Rahmatullahi, Sheikh al-Hadith. So I went there, and he used to narrate a hadith from Sahih Bukhari, Sahih Muslim, Abu Dawud, Tirmidhi Sharif, and a few other kitabs. He used to narrate by heart, without looking at the kitab. He used to recite and narrate a hadith with full rabis, the narrators from the first hadith by heart. He used to start after Fajr and he used to narrate. And we could keep the Sahih Bukhari and the other kitabs in front of us accurate. I've never met a person in my whole life who could narrate out of his heart, out of his memory, a hadith like Hazrat Abdullah Darkhasi Sahib, Rahmatullahi. And he used to narrate the whole of the Siyah Sitta. He was a hafiz of the Siyah Sitta, the six authentic books of hadith. Nowhere. I've been all over the Muslim world, Egypt, Syria, Iraq, Iran. Nowhere have I met any hafiz of the hadith. But Imam Abdullah al-Khasi Rahmatullahi was a hafiz of the hadith. These are the type and the quality of Buzurgani Deen with whom I had taluk and from whom I acquired a lot of learning. Alhamdulillah. About Imam Ghulam al-Khan Sahib, I want to narrate an episode to you. What happened there was that Azamullah Ghulam al-Khan Sahib Rahmatullahi had been, before my time, imprisoned for 3 months. At that time, the president of Pakistan was Ayub Khan. He had locked him up for 3 months. And the reason for that was because Mullah Ghulam al-Khan Sahib Rahmatullahi had been highly critical of his attitude, the president's attitude in locking up, in imprisoning certain ulama. And then in there, in prison, torturing the ulama. So what he did, he in his bayans in Juma, he used to get over 1,000 people coming. And he made bayan and he criticized the prison for imprisoning the ulama. The result was that he was in prison for 3 months as well. So Allah, what happened then? Is that Hazrat Ghulam al-Khan Sahib Rahmatullahi told me that he came to me and he said, Mullah Ibrahim Sahib, listen to me. I would like, there's a lot of prominent pilots of the Pakistani airline and other professional people that come here in this masjid. And I would like you to speak for 15 minutes or 20 minutes in English in my pre-Juma Bayan, pre-Khutbah Bayan, and you speak to them and address them. So this was the first opportunity I had to give Bayan on Juma in a foreign country. So I started and I gave the Bayan. And the Bayans were very interesting. Those people who listened were absolutely surprised and they thought, how can a Pakistani be so fluent in the English language? So they were very surprised. Many came to me afterwards and they said, they asked me, where do you get this English. Where do you get this English from? Where did you study in the UK? So I said, no, I'm from Cape Town in South Africa, and that is where we all speak English. English is our medium. Khair, that happened there away in Rawalpindi. Then after that, there's another masjid, shortly, very briefly, there's another very famous masjid in Lahore. It's called the Batrahi Masjid. And I happened to go, I had a suit with me, and I was never putting on the suit because we adopted the Islamic libas, and I never was wearing the suit. So a friend of mine who came to me saw the suit hanging in my door, and he said, Mona, give me the suit. I will give you a bicycle. So, Alhamdulillah, I handed the suit over to me, and he gave me a beautiful bicycle. So with this bicycle, every Friday, I used to go to the Batrahi Masjid. Now, this incident, I also want to relate to you quickly. What happened is, one Juma, I went to the Batrahi Masjid. And while I was there, I was surprised to see there was a stirring, a lot of noise. And who comes into the masjid? You will never believe. Muhammad Ali, the heavyweight boxing champion of the world. He had come to visit Pakistan at the time, and they told him to come to the Batrahi Masjid for Juma. So he came there, he had accepted Islam already. So he came there into the Batrahi Masjid, and as I said, there was a stirring there. So I'm sitting there in front, and I went and shook hands with him, and I spoke to him in English. So he was very surprised, very, very surprised. He said, you sit there next to me, I want to ask you some questions. And he asked me quite a number of questions about Pakistan, about the Batrahi Masjid and so on. I gave him the reply. Oh, the Pakistanis that were sitting there, all looking at me in bewilderment. Where does this chap come from who's so fluent in English? They were absolutely surprised. But anyway, I explained to Muhammad Ali everything about Pakistan, about Juma and so on, and eventually the khutbah was made, bayan was given, and so on. Alhamdulillah. The Imam of the Masjid came to me and he told me, Mullah, after you finish, I want to talk to you. So I said, no problem at all. So Alhamdulillah, after that, after I had spoken to Muhammad Ali and explained a few things to him, after that, after Juma, he of course left. Posh car came to fetch him, and he went to the airport and he left. So Alhamdulillah, that is what happened in the masjid. After that, in the Batrahi Masjid, every week I used to go, people were astonished, and the Imam used to give me a bit of time to address the people in the Batrahi Masjid as well. And after the Salah of Juma, many people used to invite me to come and have meals in their home. So that was another opening that I received, and I became very friendly with a lot of people of Lahore at that time. And that is what happened there. Alhamdulillah, in Rawalpindi, when Azama Ghulam Khan had given me a chance to address the people in English for almost a year, I spoke in Juma and I gave bayan. What happened there was that, strangely enough, eventually, there must have been some government people coming to this particular masjid. So I received an invitation from the president to come and meet him after I spoke. In one bayan, I said that Hazrat Maulana Ghulam Khan was imprisoned here, and this would never be allowed in South Africa. In South Africa, even if we criticize the government. We are not locked up, we are not in prison, and no torture is given. So my invitation, I'm saying this in Juma, Bayan, that I invite Azmar Ghulam Khan Sahab to leave and with his whole family to come away to South Africa. I send an invitation to him and said he must come away to South Africa. He will be a free man, absolutely. Somehow this report went to the president, and the president then, a few people came and they spoke to my Ghulam Khan Sahab and they extended an invitation to me to go to the president's house. And I was taken there. They took me by car and I met the president and Ayub Khan. I met him there, spoke to him. He was very pleasant, very, and he told me that, did you mean it when you invited Ghulam Khan Sahab to South Africa? I said, but absolutely, we have deep respect for the ulama-i karam, and we will never do what you did to him. Imprison him and torture him in prison. This will never happen in South Africa. Anyhow, that was there. He asked me also, he said, what are you doing in Lahore? What are you doing here? I explained to him that I was in Daruma Shafia and I come there to study Deen. So Alhamdulillah, that went off well. Then he told me something else. He said, can you speak to Azmar Ghulam Khan Sahab? I need, in those days, the military had cantonments, that means barracks for the soldiers. And they needed Hufaz. Ramadan was coming, so they needed Hufaz to lead the Taraweeh Salah. So they needed eight Hufaz. And he asked me, can you make the arrangement for these Hufaz to come from the Madrasa? I went back, I spoke to my Ghulam Khan Sahab, and that arrangement was for years afterwards from Ghulam Khan Sahab used to provide Hufaz for the cantonments or military soldiers that carried on for many, many years. So Alhamdulillah, those were some of the things that happened whilst I was in Pakistan. Let's proceed now. What happened now? All my ulama teachers in Pakistan,